Episode 7, Underground Espionage. Tara, how is it going?
It's fantastic.
Yes, it is fantastic. We are excited to discuss a new favorite here, a movie that we came to this past week and watched twice. That is how much we
even better the second time. I really
so many movies are sometimes you watch a movie once and really love it, and you have that urge to watch it again, but you're like, oh, I already watched it. I don't need to watch it again. Honestly, I think that second watch is always better.
Yeah.
And that's I think that's part of what's great about owning movies is that it gives you that chance to do that. But we've done that now. We did that with Roommates. We did that with Black Room. The movie we're going to do next week, we just recently watched, and we're going to watch it again.
Wait, what movie?
We're going to watch.
Are you going to say it at the end of it, or just say
I'll
it?
Just say it
now.
Now. Get ready. Now. We're going to do The Black Cat.
Oh, yeah. That was a wild watch.
It was a crazy,
wild watch.
Crazy movie.
Yeah.
The Luigi Cozzi, who also directed Contamination, the great Hercules movies, The Black Cat.
Love the Hercules movies.
Absolute batshit insane movie next week's episode, so prepare for that. But this one, we knew immediately this felt so much like in line with what we've been doing.
Yeah.
That we knew this just had to be this week. So excited to talk about
it's an room. It's an easy transition from like
Pandora's
vintage,
Mirror
vintage pornography into a more modern take on a 70s style sex romper room.
I mean, this there's the line between this movie and pornography is so thin.
This I know there's a whole like we're watching it last night. I'm like, this feels like it's going to be porn soon. Like it, there are points in this where I'm just like, they could have just put it in right here and it would have fit. You know, like no one would have been like, that's jarring, that's out of place. It would have absolutely fit.
Yeah.
Are there any like slasher murder pornography?
Well, I mean,
it's just like straight
Dracula
up porn.
Sucks in a way, I guess. But which actually
yeah.
the director, writer and co-director Norman Thaddeus Vane worked on that movie. I mean, yeah, but I don't. Is there anything? I mean, that scene in Roommates with Jamie Gillis when he's stalking her in the bedroom.
Yeah, Roommates definitely has that element in it. Yeah,
you know, but there's gonna be a lot we're gonna be getting to that I think could fit. In
but I think also like it probably was restricted because aren't there just like really there are really strong guidelines with porn about like animals can't be present in the room, things can't be
well
on the
I
bed,
think I mean
like
in the
violence,
70s and 80s I don't think there
not.
Was
yeah.
the things were a bit out the window
yeah.
I think now there's more rules like yeah. that. The one rule that I've wondered about is especially with like BDSM scenes is I believe there can't be blood. I don't know why in my mind that's true because in my mind with so much wrestling we watch, I'm like, why don't they blade themselves? And
yeah, it would be so easy. Yeah, they must not be able
it must to. Be a rule.
I'm sure there's whole categories and you can see it, but
but like
it's not
on like a professional
yeah.
shoot, I would assume that's some sort of rule. But maybe it's not. Maybe no one's thought to do it, but I feel like
no, that can't be the case.
Yeah.
That cannot be the case. Yeah. Absolutely. With the 90s like cutting tradition, like
well, I just a quick blade job on your forehead and just bleeding while you're all chained up.
Yeah,
I'd watch that.
Yeah.
So yeah, excited to talk about The Black Room. Tara, anything else been going on this week that you would like to discuss? I mean, I would say that.
I mean, there's tons of exciting right now. Like
you're just in the Black Room zone.
Well, I'm in the Black Room zone and I have so many things. I am excited that my fingernail polish is peeling slightly, so this entire episode I can talk to you while I peel my nail polish off. So that is really fun for me.
Yeah.
Paint them up, peel them off.
I'm with you. This movie is just so great, and I have so many thoughts about it that I'm down to just dive right in, open up that door into the Black Room. And we do have background information on the movie courtesy of Stephen Thrower from the book Nightmare USA, as well as he has a little extra on the Blu-ray as well.
It's fantastic.
So we'll have some background info courtesy of Mr. Stephen Thrower.
So just to if you haven't seen it, so we can all kind of get on the same page of what we're dealing with here, this film is from 1982, and it's that magical time where, you know, it's not the full swing of like Cosby sweater 80s and neons. It's more of the You have a lot of leftover browns and kind of pessimistic but freewheeling attitudes of the 70s. So
but there's
That's kind of where we are, right? Like not there's no eye popping, there's no neon, that type of thing, right?
Correct. There's this very dark palette to this whole movie.
Which, yeah, a lot of goldenrod, which is fantastic. So we have a husband and wife who have two children, and they really do love each other. And they're both very sex positive, and they're both very horny. However, everyday life kind of gets in the way. Having children, the mundane aspects, kind of throw a damper on their sex life. And so while they're struggling to achieve a balance, the sexy husband decides to look into the paper to rent a room so that he can take babes there and bang them to just kind of reinvigorate his life. If they weren't so young, it would be like a midlife crisis kind of classic trope, but it's not because they're young and cute. So he rents this room, but there's clearly something special about this place. It's a one bedroom, what, $200 a month up in the Hollywood Hills. And the eccentric landlords are brother and sister, and they will pour your wine, light your candles, and throw on some classical music so that you can come up to your little love nest and have a bang sesh. Just out of the goodness of their hearts, just because they're such sweetheart people. And so then the entire film just kind of goes from there about him having his affairs. And we learn about the deeper eccentricities of his landlords.
And what is happening is that the brother and sister who own the house that has the black room in it.
So the room that he rents, they refer to it as the black room because it's kind of our aesthetic style. It's covered in draped velvets and rugs and lots of candelabras.
Yeah, it's funny. The way you described the movie is actually, I was
setting it up so that we could further go through it. Okay, okay. I was like, okay.
Yes,
I wasn't trying to peel everything back all at once. Like, I was like, we're it's not over after that. Like, we're gonna keep discussing it. So I was only teeing up.
Okay.
What we were about to discuss, I was gonna kind of peel it back slowly instead of just
I'm in
blasting everybody right in the face all at once.
I am in. I like it.
A little seduction, perchance.
So the impetus of this movie actually did come from Norman Thaddeus Vane, the writer and co-director's real life. He's a very interesting character.
By all accounts.
Mostly a playwright in the 50s, 60s, and into the 70s. He did some plays in America. He's from Long Island. Went to the UK and did some plays there. Tried to do a couple movies. They barely came out, and they're pretty much lost to this day. Conscious Bay and Fledglings. I believe neither of them have ever resurfaced.
Hey, maybe somebody will get a used car and pop that out of the trunk. Just like
Run Coyote Run.
You got it.
The Renee Harmon. It's funny because I was looking through Nightmare USA. It's funny because I think about Nightmare USA and I've referenced it a bunch, but it's actually been a while since I opened it up.
Yeah.
And it is funny because there's so much that we've discussed and it's like, oh yeah, don't forget to use this book as a reference.
Yeah, like there's a whole Renee Harmon. Like we never like crack it open anymore because like it's just had
there.
It for
the
so
spine
long.
Has literally been sitting there. We stare at it every single day.
Yeah.
So I'm going to make a point to crack it open a lot
more.
What
a great book.
So he then at a certain point was back in the States and was working for Penthouse. And he was saying that he, while working there, he wanted to, you know, he was married and both him and his wife were unfaithful to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted a place where he could bring these Penthouse
gals
back to. And so this is Norman Thaddeus Vane's words from Nightmare USA, as told to Stephen Thrower. I'll tell you something I haven't told anyone else. While I was working for Penthouse, I was married to Sarah, the 16-year-old model and actress. And yes, he was married to a 16-year-old.
Yes.
When he was
again,
working
for
Penthouse.
A complicated character.
Different times. We were both very unfaithful to each other, but neither told the other about it. I kept meeting all these beautiful women at Penthouse who wanted to fuck my brains out, and I had no place to take them. And yeah, he will definitely, the way he discusses his past and history, he has passed away now, but you know, all these Penthouse playmates just wanted to fuck his
brains
out.
Exactly. They couldn't keep it together. You know what? Like, I'm dying to fuck your brains out.
Relatable.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, right. Uh-huh.
Relatable.
Yeah.
Oh, you don't think so? You don't think that's relatable?
I did not disagree. I think you only heard an affirmation from me.
So I rented a small room in the basement of a house of a South African painter. This was the deal. I would call him up when I was coming over. He would go down to this lovely room in his basement, put on music, light the candles, and open a bottle of cold wine and leave it on the table. I guess white wine.
Oh, cool. I mean, or they could be maniacs and chill some reds. They're chillable reds. Maybe a peanut
butter. When I arrived there with a girl, usually the latest penthouse center spread, she saw the room with the candles lit, the wine cold, and the Vivaldi playing, and she couldn't believe it. What I didn't know was the South African painter had a hole in the wall and was watching everything we did. One day I saw a little gleam of light coming from the hole in the wall, and I followed it around to the next room, caught him in the act, and for the first time, understood what was going on. Mm-hmm. I immediately terminated our arrangement. By then, however, four or five ladies had been through the room, and it became the basis for the movie.
So it's fantastic that he took that experience and transferred into film, because truly that is what happens, is they have a one-way mirror in their home that leads into the black room so that they can take photographs and, I don't know, do whatever.
Yeah, spy on
people who like to watch. Yeah, be voyeurs. But it has many layers to it, too, because, you know, the brother and the sister, again, that's why I want to take this slow.
I'm with you.
So many things.
I'm with you.
There's so many things to discuss here.
I have nowhere else I want to be.
But what I'm saying is, like, you're a lady. You walk in, some guy invites you over, you walk into a dimly lit room, there's already wine out, which is sus, and it's like this.
It's on.
Like, are you like, it's going down?
Heck yeah. It's on, you know what I mean? Especially,
you're just like, who is this guy?
Especially back then, I mean, in that room, in that black room. It's on. I love
it. Like, when they discuss that, and they kind of, like, talk about, you know, their arrangements, and Jason is the landlord guy's name. We haven't discussed all of him yet, and he's like, yeah, we got a great sound system here. We got a great record collection, mostly classical. And then, at, like, different points, he's like, yeah, mostly Vivaldi, mostly classical. But I love that the Vivaldi is actually from what was happening there.
Yeah.
And then at one point in the movie, Jason's like, you want me to switch it up? You want me to put on some Chopin?
It's
and I'm
so
just
great.
Like, oh, my God.
It's so great.
Yeah, give me
I
a lullaby,
it.
Dude. Give me a lullaby.
I love it. It's so great.
Yeah, so I think that's a fantastic aspect of this. And truly, I was like, no way. And then I started thinking about different Vivaldis, and I thought of this particular, that Allegro non molto piece, which is, you know, in like countless like diamond ads and commercials. But I've always thought it was like solid and intense to listen to because it's like so tension building. I'm like, yeah, you could bang to that. Like,
heck
you
yeah.
Could bang to that. Now we can just kind of go through, because we haven't even discussed like the amazing stars and the people in it. So, like, let's just kind of take a
well,
walk
and
through
what
we're dealing with
we
here.
The stars in it, and then the actual what the why these people have this black room.
Yeah, so let's just jump in. So we get kind of a glimpse, like the film starts. We get a glimpse of the room, right? We get a pan over the room.
The opening's amazing.
We see, you know, the lovers and the lavish. Like, again, like, I can't. What's so iconic about the room, one, is that it has that I'm being classy, I'm being sleazy aesthetic, which is kind of us, right?
Yeah.
And it has a glowing cube coffee table. So while it has like the like oriental rugs on the floor,
pillows everywhere, candles,
brocade and drapes and like velvet lining the walls, which kind of dampens the light, right? And just so many candelabras. Mike, how many things, like, we used to be candelabra people, but I think that to be a candelabra person, you need central air, and we don't have that here in Hollywood.
Right.
You can't just have, like, a fan blasting and a unit on the wall, because it creates too much moving air, and you get candle wax everywhere. But how many things do you think we have ruined? How many carpets, shirts, tablecloths, everything that we've ruined with candle wax? Like, it's just, I can't even count the number of things that we have ruined, books, with our little dalliances into these candelabras. But the glowing coffee table absolutely like takes the cake.
It's incredible.
As everybody, it's like a big plastic cube coffee table that glows. I'm so glad that we watched this twice because, you know, on the second watch, I decided that we are getting a glowing coffee table. I looked it up. I found some. I couldn't find the whole like long table, but I did find like a 16 by 16 footstool. I wanted an 18 by 18, but the 18 by 18, I can find 17 by 17, but it's like $300 more for one more inch. And I'm thinking, I don't need that inch, right? But don't you think, Mike, that we need that in our home?
I mean,
I'm going to spring it on you right now. I know we kind of we bandied it about last night, but I thought now that you're a captive audience and we're recording this and all these wonderful people are here with us, then maybe we can have a real conversation about
it. Yeah. No, I mean, I think it's something that our home, it would befit our home. And I think, and I think the combination of the Black Room and next week's movie, The Black Cat, certainly sums up our place in some sort of way. The actual look of the interiors.
But it can be my footstool over here, and then when we're recording, I could use it like a little table, and I could put like a beverage on it, and it'd be closer.
Look,
I just think it's the way to go. My mind is mostly made up. I'm going to find a coupon, as I am wont to do. So we get this amazing opening, right? Two people making love, being sensual together, and then we see blood spurting through hoses, and all of a sudden there are two gorgeous people that are throwing some nails and some coffins outside in the yard. So that's our cold opening. We have sex. We have a wildly sleazy room. We have people getting murdered and buried. So that's kind of our opening. Right
away we are in. And noting here that something that will continue throughout the movie, the music is incredible.
Yes, not when it's not, you know, classical.
Like the actual soundtrack.
The actual soundtrack is great. It's like minimal synth.
It's incredible
throbbing.
Electronic.
Yes.
Lots of parts literally sound like eroticism.
Yeah.
And it unfortunately doesn't say, there's no real credit to, like, this would be a soundtrack.
Yeah, we were like, who did this soundtrack?
I've never had the urge to release a soundtrack.
Yeah.
But this soundtrack, I would 100% want to release. I doubt the elements exist separately. I don't know how that would even work.
Yeah.
But this is hardly even seriously credited. One of the best soundtracks I've heard. It just sounds like great 1981 synth.
Yeah.
Perfect for our zone.
So then after we get that, we are cut to a cute young couple in bed. Larry. Great guy. Larry and Robin. And, you know, the thing I like about Robin is she really does like to wear, like, a nice teddy and a robe, a slip. You know, that's a great style.
Robin,
really into it.
I'm quite attracted to Robin. I find her to be quite attractive, as well as the sister Bridget in
Cassandra
the...
Cassandra Gava. Dude.
In the...
home. I mean, who... every
Actually, all
the
chicks
entire,
are pretty hot in
yeah,
this.
Everybody in the entire world loves Cassandra.
Yeah.
I mean, it's inarguable. But we are not there yet, Mike. They are trying to get it on. And then we hear the whiny kids next door. Mom, I don't want to sleep in my bed. And you feel for them. You feel for them. Mom's going to go. And it, you know, you look at the clock and it is 11:41.
It's like they should be, the kids should be asleep. Yeah.
They shouldn't be doing that. Also, like, you shouldn't be able to hear them that well. Just a wild thing. Did you sleep with your door open or closed, Mike, as a child?
God, I barely remember, to be honest.
Really?
I've always remember.
I've always been a door closed person.
I must have. I probably was, yeah, because I'm such like a private.
Yeah, I know some people like would just straight up sleep with their doors open, like eat like as kids, and I would just be like, "What are you doing?"
No, I must have. No, because I would like no, yeah, yeah, closed.
Yeah, I would lose my mind. Yeah, I like doors closed all the time.
So when you ask me that, I'm like, I don't know. Like, yeah, closed.
Yeah, they
yeah,
do
yeah.
it. Doors open.
We sleep with our door closed, and there's no one else here.
Yeah,
it just feels right.
Yeah, I used to sleep with my door closed and locked.
I like that.
I like a door closed and locked, and even when no one's home, but I don't do that anymore. Anyway, I took a picture of the ad. So we see that you know, they're getting a little sexually frustrated, and they kind of tease it up. But then we get to see Larry over in his beautifully red leather interiored car. Like, you really got to be a certain type of person to have red leather interior. That shit fades, Mike. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Sun damage, like it... Like, no,
I feel like
this
doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah, I feel like the boldness of having that entirely red interior doesn't happen. It's a shame because it's gorgeous, but I just remember the cars of my youth, which would have been, you know, in the early 80s, and just the pink faded interiors from this lovely red. So here we go. Here's Witty Circles. Hollywood Hills. Live your fantasy. Hilltop Mansion has unique and exotic room for rent. Panoramic view. $200 per month.
Love it.
It's a goddamn deal right there.
God, yeah. So this house is in the hills. According to the background info, it's more on the Mulholland Drive side of the hills. So actually not close to where we... I mean, it's all sort of close to where we are.
Yeah, but that would explain the panoramic view.
It looks
incredible. I mean, you get a lot of
views
in Hollywood. We get great
views. These houses up there, having been in a couple... They're very strange. They can be sort of hidden in plain sight. And even the actual layout of the homes, because of where they have been built, have these strange layouts.
Yeah, I'm always shocked by the unusual amount of privacy you can get. Because, like, Los Angeles, like, everybody's on top of each other, right? And then not having lived here, I would always be like, I just didn't understand why somebody would want to live in the hills. But after going up there, it's like... Sure, the drive up is insane, and the way that the streets are not straight and they're curvy and curly-cued, and you can't tell which direction you're supposed to go, and it's kind of shouldn't be two-way when they are two-way. But the privacy is unreal. Like, you go into a house on a hill, and it's like you won't see another neighbor around you. You won't know your neighbors exist. You have, like, a private view just kind of off the edge of a cliff, and there could be no one, like, you're seemingly the only person that lives there, right?
Yeah,
in that area. It's crazy.
It's strange and cool, too, because even the houses themselves, it's almost hard to tell, like, what's the front door, what's the back door. It's very strange.
Yeah.
And this house in the movie has that feeling.
Like, you're like, what's the front? What's the side? And, like, the yards will be expansive, but really it's like sometimes the back of the house is truly the front of the house. And then sometimes you'll go, like, into one of the houses on a hill. You'll park your car in the street. You don't even see that there's a house. And you'll, like, walk down steps and then go in a front door, and all of a sudden you're in this just, like, massive mansion. You know, it's insane.
Yeah, it really is. And so that's the atmosphere and the predominant setting of this movie, and then
which it
where...
feels like sinister thing. Like, every time you go into one at night, and you're like, especially if you haven't been to, like, a place and you're going to meet somebody on the hill and you're going at night, it has a sinister feeling. You're like,
absolutely
climbing up a weird mountain, and then you, like, get into this place where you feel so isolated, and it's dark and sinister, and you can't tell, you know, what the layout is, what's happening, how, where the hill is, like, where it drops off. Like, am I just going to step off the edge of their yard and fall off a cliff?
And there's even scenes in this movie that have that feel to it.
Really cool. When he's running, and they do kind of roll down a cliff.
Yeah.
So again, you're so trapped too, like, for lack of a better word, like, it's not, there's not a lot of options where you can run, you know? So, already you have that crazy, dark, and foreboding thing going on. So, our boy Larry, it doesn't take him long. You know, as soon as he gets his room, as soon as he goes up there, they make their deal, you know, Larry makes his deal with Jason, his new landlord, who has so many bones in his face, more teeth than is humanly possible. Like, the Jason looks like, well, we can go more into Jason in a moment. So, he makes his deal and he gets to work. So he starts driving down the street, sees a pretty little hitchhiker, asks her if she wants a ride. They seem to hit it off. He says, what's he say, Mike? He's like, well, we could go back to my place, but...
But my wife wouldn't like it.
My kids would like you, but my wife wouldn't like
it. Exactly.
So they're going to go to the room. And I also love, I forgot when he was... making his deal with Jason, he's like, are there any restrictions? And Jason's like, this isn't the YMCA. No restrictions. I'm like, oh, baby.
He's like, just call me ahead. I'll have the candles lit. I'll have the music going, and I'll have the wine poured.
Wonderful, wonderful. Another charming aspect of Larry is that, you know, when he's talking to this hitchhiker, who's wearing, she's fantastic. She's wearing a bizarre shirt, which is my old favorite fashion magazine. Like, when fashion mags were a thing and you'd read them, I always had a subscription to Bizarre. She says her old man is a saprophyte, which is like, I think it's supposed to mean like she's like a college girl and she's smart She was like, it's kind of like a parasite. She's
totally acting like...
Yeah, he's a sacrifice. He just, like, sucks. He's like a parasite. He eats all the, like, energy of other people. And I was like, for a minute, I was so confused because I was like, aren't mushrooms and like, fungi saprophytes? And I was like, they feed off decaying matter, and I had to look it up. Saprotroph, saprophyte, an organism that feeds on non-living organic matter known as detritus, and at a microscopic level, so it can also be bacterium. Their organisms are considered critical to decomposition and nutrient cycling, including fungi, certain bacteria, and water molds. So I had to look it up, and if that's going to bother you too, I just thought I would let everybody hear. If that type of thing gets in your head and you have to go look it up, no problem. I'm here to do the work for you, but it does display that she's a clever gal, although I don't think, we do meet her old man, and I don't think he's living off decaying matter. Jason would be more of a saprophyte, right? Am I wrong here?
No,
but her old man, she's trying to say that he's kind of a drag, right? He's an old stick in the mud, whatever. It's all good. So they go back to the room and start making love. We finally get to spend a little more time with the beautiful Bridget.
Yeah, so she's amazing, and you know, we see them spying and getting super excited watching these two go at it.
Yeah, so he finally brings somebody back. They drink their wine, they smoke their pot, and they start fucking, and then we get to see the old brother and sister pull back a curtain, reveal a one-way mirror, and start taking pics.
Yeah, it's incredible. So immediately, again, this whole movie just has this dark sex atmosphere that we just love.
Yeah.
And we were so...
Kind of a People Under the Stairs vibe in a way.
Yeah, and we were just so taken with right away and just knew that this was the atmosphere that we love about this place.
Mm-hmm.
And meaning like... L.A., like this dark sex. I mean, and our place.
And but I was like, our home.
Well, our home, too. But I mean, like, just that element of it. And just that, again, as we've discussed, that idea of getting in over your head, you know?
Yeah, it's not, and it's not necessarily just, like, seediness. There's, like, a tackiness to it. But it's, like, a tacky elegance. Like, it's not.
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
It's aesthetically pleasing, but it's not for everybody. You know what I mean?
You could say that. About us, Tara, you can say that.
Not for everybody. But so Bridget, and I know that Cassandra has like a longer last name, and I'm just going to say Gava because I know that I can say it well, but she does have a longer last name. And she is like she's a cultural icon. Like you see her and you know who she, like immediately I'm like Conan, right? Because I was obsessed with the Conan movie. She was the witch in the first Conan that he, you know, makes love to. I say witch because they said that she was a witch. That's what they called her.
I don't think anyone's offended, Tara. I don't know why.
Well, I wasn't disclaimering it, but I would say she was more like a priestess. You know what I mean? Okay. In that, oh, come on. You don't need to roll your eyes at me in judgment. You know what? Your tomorrow self's going to regret that you were such a hater right there. But she was also in China Beach. She was in General Hospital, which when I went out to the rural places every summer and stayed with my family where you only have three channels, I sure as shit watched General Hospital because the channel came in great during the day. There were only three channels. At nighttime, you didn't get the channels great. And we would like shuck beans and can things and prepare food and watch General Hospital. And I loved it. And I remember her and I love her for it. She was also on the cover of the Jefferson Starship album Spitfire, which is prominently featured in this film without revealing what it is.
Yeah, it's amazing. In her artist room, she's
like,
a painter.
I know that image. What the hell is that?
Yeah, there's this giant poster of her riding a dragon. It is the cover of that Jefferson Starship album. So I love the idea that they're utilizing her real life in this
Yeah, and she way. Was also a very successful model as well.
Yeah, so there's model pictures
in
of her.
In spite of being big-breasted.
So she's a painter, an artist. He's the photographer. And there's this strange artist couple. But Tara, you know, we've been discussing this movie for a half hour. And we've been working into this to the point where we haven't even revealed just exactly. Not only are they voyeurs and want to take pictures of these people having sex, but Tara, why in that beginning scene Why are they killing people? Why is there blood splattering everywhere?
There's so much to unpeel.
What, Tara, are they doing?
Jason has thalassemia, which causes him to have the need to replenish his blood. So thalassemia is an inherited blood disorder that causes your body to have less hemoglobin than normal. Hemoglobin enables red blood cells to carry oxygen. Thalassemia can cause anemia, leaving you fatigued, but severe forms can require regular blood transfusions. And you have to think that the filmmaker knows about this. Like, it's true.
Now, yeah, yeah.
Now, again, on the second watch, I had a lot more thoughts about this, and I have a lot of notes about my thoughts about this, Mike, so we can discuss. So I was eager to get into this portion, but I knew as soon as we did, it was like opening a can of worms.
Well, what I want to say before you do that is I think what's so interesting and unique about this story is that they are vampires, but, or he is a vampire, but it's not supernatural. Like, it is,
it's a pragmatic
vampire. It's real life vampirism.
There's no supernatural elements in this film.
There's stuff hinted
thus
at,
far.
And there's a blurring of it at the very, very end, but ultimately is actually just a grounded to life story where this guy actually needs his blood.
He needs constant transfusions because he has a really severe
case
of thalassemia.
And so their whole thinking is that they want to do it themselves. They don't want to go to the hospitals. They want fresh blood. Well, I just want to talk about how it's how they've turned it into a fetish, into a sexual thing. And I think that's a great way to deal with such an intense medical situation, to turn it into a fetish.
A murder sex fetish.
Exactly.
Because he says that, because Jason says that he's photographing and documenting these people because it's like he's capturing part of their soul so that at least remains alive. So again, another part of his like sexual fetish. I guess that's pornographic photos he's taking. And then also, you know, I was really like, Jason's face is really remarkable. Like, I mean, truly, to be able to stand next to Bridget, like Cassandra, you have to be very, like, she is.
Yeah, they fit together, for
they
sure.
They fit together. They're supposed to be brother and sister.
Believe that they're brother and sister, and I kept forgetting that they were.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird one. Maybe they have a different parent on some side.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But they are both so striking, and their faces are so impossibly pretty. But Jason really is one of those people where you're like, in real life, he wouldn't look nearly as attractive because his bones are just like jutting out of his face and his teeth are just giant. You know what I mean? Like, he kind of looks like malformed in some way. But actually, one of the symptoms of thalassemia, Mike, is facial bone deformity.
There you go. So,
like, it causes their bones to expand and they have unusually large facial bones. Now, I looked up examples of facial bone deformities and thalassemia. Not nearly an attractive deformation such as Jason, but you know what? He is lucky on many accounts. Other things, he could have pale or yellowish skin. He's kind of pale. And dark urine, but we never see his urine, so maybe one day. But yes, facial bone deformities are part of it. Now,
but, well, and the as brother and sister, they have a somewhat incestuous relationship in that they do watch each other through the glass, and even to the point when Cassandra and Larry have this wild sex session with paint and riding and bull play, you know, he's watching the whole time. So there is somewhat of an incestuous relationship.
But this has some like cool throwbacks. I'll get into more blood stuff in a minute. I'll pepper it through. This has some cool throwbacks to another era. Like, you know, trends of the time, sexual trends of the time, you know, like kind of like in the 90s where fuzzy cuffs were just like everywhere, like an Animal House, the body painting party, or like when people would want to have like sexy little parties and they would do body painting sex. So they have an all on this. I guess this is neon. So I was wrong. It's a little neon.
This is the most neon of it all.
But it's a freaky bang session. She's wearing like feathers in her hair. And it's like you know, that time when that concept of like a free will and free spirit who just wants to do weird stuff and have sex, like the good natured and wild, like, and I was trying to think, like, when we're watching this, because that is a trope, right? And it looks cool and it shows up great on film and everybody's like having a jaunt and fun, you know, no strings attached. Like, what is the modern equivalent to that?
I think Yellow Gas Flames Initiation Services.
I don't know.
Is that equivalent?
Something to think about. Yes, but and another amazing aspect of the like fetish photos, when Cassandra is laughing.
Oh, it's so crazy sounding.
They always like throw an echo or a reverb.
Yeah, that's what
on
I'm saying. The sounds are amazing.
She's riding him around like a bull, and he's like, "Hey," and the bullfighter, you know. She's like, you be the bull this time. And she's like, well, he's like, well, the bull gets stabbed in the end, you know? And then, so we have that little play of like, is she going to kill him? Is she not going to kill him? And then she's like cackling with laughter.
It's
and it's
so
echoing.
Great.
And then we'll have like Jason taking photos through the mirror. And then her laugh is just like echoing and reverberating around with like a minimal synth. It's so good.
And then it cuts to them having just a photo session, the brother and sister themselves with smoke and she's going crazy, and that's at one point she goes, he goes, oh, you can't go two times in a night anymore. So that's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
like,
so they
you never
are,
see
yeah.
them actually do anything, but they just like
tease it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and in a way, but she's also like, I have needs too. Like, so in some ways, she's saying she needs to fuck too. But you know, okay. So my other thing about the blood. So another theme running through this film is the needle. So, like, if you're the type of person that has a you cringe at needles, you don't like needles, you don't want to see needles, you feel sick at needles. Like, I know people have that. Same for you, because there's a bunch of needles.
I would say plow through it, because this movie's worth it.
Yeah, but some people, like, seriously, like puke and pass out and shit.
Plow through
it. I had
a
friend like that, and she tried to give blood and passed out.
Plow through it. This movie's worth it.
It's worth it. Okay, so... it's got a needle theme to it. Lots of big needles, giving needles, stabbing with needles. But it's also like a lovely like needle fetish kind of way. Like if you have a medical fetish, then this is for you.
100%.
The thing that they use to like draw the blood out is like a two-pronged sucker that like they stick in somebody's neck to like suck their blood. And they pull the blood out real sloppy.
The blood scenes in this movie are really cool. The way the room that they're in when they're taking the blood, there's sort of two different areas where they're doing this. There's the vials of blood everywhere. And yeah, it just has this great, it's just the actual way it looks, the lighting, it has this very natural, it looks very real. It looks like it's really happening. I love that.
And it's lovely, like bright red blood, and there's blood everywhere and people get bloody and, it's great. It's great. And, you know, we're draining the lovers as they come along. For example, at one point, Larry finds a lady of the night and brings her back. And he's going to pay her $200 for 2 hours. And he's like, I'll give you half now and half after the deed. And she's like, what is this, Sia's? And it's great. And she's one of my favorite actresses in this film because at first she's like, I'm from Long Island. And then all of a sudden she's kind of not and has like a totally different like proper accent. And it's a wild scene. She's an actress. She's great. She's great. She kind of does like a Marilyn Monroe breathy thing. Like, okay, baby. And it's, she's fantastic. But he ties her hands up. He's going to have to pay extra for it. And then blindfolds her and then realizes, shit, he's got a meeting he's got to get to. So he leaves her there. And he says, sit on it and keep it warm for me, baby, which is what a great line in that situation. What great writing in this film. And so, you know, if you leave a lady
in the black room,
what's going to happen?
She's getting her blood drained.
She's the one who gets free.
Yes, she does, and then she falls down the hill and
so
she runs.
We have a really cool chase scene. So again, they had something.
The chase scene looks amazing.
So they're draining her. They get her. They, you know, etherize her, which seems so fun. Like, don't you wish somebody would just ether cloth you every night to go to sleep?
Go to sleep.
It's the dream.
Be amazing.
Oh my god. But you know, they're draining her blood, and but Jason has one of his little episodes and needs some pills to like get through it, and she gets up and almost escapes. So you run around the house and you get to see that crazy landscape of
does this
yard drop off of a giant cliff or a small cliff, and then you see the like terraced effect to make the flat yard, and then she kind of throws herself down a dirt cliff to get onto the road, but she doesn't get away.
It's so cool, the actual camera work of this, when they're following everyone chasing it, has this really great dizzying feel to it that's amazing. One thing that goes throughout the movie that I really like is that the husband, Larry, is constantly telling his wife about the black room and what he's doing there.
It's his loophole.
But she doesn't believe him. She thinks it's he's saying it in a fantasy way, but he's actually just saying what he's doing. Like, oh, no, yeah, no, I rented this black room, describes it, says what he's going to do it, and she says...
And he frames it like a fantasy.
And she's like, I want you to treat me like you treat those women. And he's like, no, you're my wife. And here's the thing. That is a ridiculous attitude to have in a relationship, in a married relationship. Your wife can also be your whore.
Yeah.
And that is something important. It is an important thing to try to think that you can't do that with your wife. It's like, dude, you're doing it wrong.
Well, I think that's kind of the LBD or the ceasing to see your partner as a sexual entity because you've engaged in too much mundane life together. Like, she's become a mother to their children and she's no longer his sexual partner. And so I think I think it's a really important aspect in a relationship.
Absolutely.
Of staying together. I mean, I guess at some point we've been together 25 years. And you can't be into that mindset where you just see, you can see people as many things. You can see someone as your best friend and your financial partner and somebody that you're planning your future with, or another person who's taking authority of like your pets, your children, whatever. But like, you can't stop looking at them as somebody that you want to be intimate with in many ways. So you need to maintain your intimacy, whatever that is, whichever way you like to engage in physical intimacy, not just mental intimacy.
Physical intimacy. It's huge. It's obviously. And,
exactly.
And so the way that, you know, and the way that she wants to be a part of it.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, is like, whatever your ideas and fantasies are, gotta do it together. That's
gotta
that's
figure
the key.
Out a way to.
You gotta do it together,
because it's like, maybe get creative in how to include each other. You know, if he's bored with her at home and they get interrupted, then they should go to the black room and try something new. Maybe they should pick up the hitchhiker together and go to the black room. Maybe they should, you know, or maybe if that doesn't like get it for them, they need to figure out what they are into. Maybe they're into needles. Yeah. Maybe they're.
Yeah, maybe, yeah, hey.
You know what? Maybe they're into public spaces. She was talking about she wanted to bang him on the beach, you know, which I typically frown him. But like, maybe it's fun. I don't know.
The underground espionage life lesson this week. Do it together.
Do it together.
Pick up that hitchhiker together.
Yeah. Exactly. Go, you know, get nude on a sandy beach together.
Exactly.
Stab yourself with a bunch of needles together.
Together.
Pierce your bits together.
She eventually does take his car out and finds the ad circled in his dashboard along with the keys to the black room, and immediately knows that this black room is real. So she goes. I like that she just goes, I'm gonna go check it out myself.
Yeah.
I'm curious.
She's great.
And she does. And this section of the movie contains her relationship with the black room. And I love this section. I think this is so
great. We know she has a babysitter. She has Millie.
Well, that comes into play later, because we do have Linnea Quigley.
Oh, what a joy. Soon. Like, as soon as we meet Millie the babysitter, it's just like, it's like the film went from like 9.5, 9.9, straight to 10.
And I really like this section of the movie where she is exploring the black room, because she goes through all the roller coaster emotions of what she's doing, because mm-hmm. she goes in and she meets Jason and immediately has sex with Jason, and she loves it.
Yeah.
She really likes it. And then he, and of course Bridget's watching, and mm-hmm. Bridget loves it. And then he,
Bridget really likes Larry. She doesn't want anybody to hurt Larry.
Yeah,
she
exactly.
keeps saying,
so
don't
they,
hurt
the
Larry.
Both of them like yeah. the other one, yeah. right? And so he has the idea of like, well, come back when your husband has someone in here, and then you can watch through the looking glass. And when she does that, she freaks out and she's not into
it. She's crying and she can't handle it. And she's like, I just don't like this.
But then she eventually comes around and like decides, well, maybe I do want to do it. And this is when Larry brings back his first hitchhiker girl along with her boyfriend, played by Christopher McDonald.
I know, right?
Who has been in so much stuff,
so
including Boys Next Door.
Yeah.
Including Happy Gilmore.
Yeah.
this is an early movie for him. So they have this, well, sort of through way. He basically just wants to watch, and he's sort of involved, but basically it's Larry and the girl and our.
Yeah, he said he was there because he is a psychology student, yeah. and he just wants to observe what goes on in a situation or a hookup, and he's yeah. researching just casual sexual.
But
hookups.
Then she goes and picks him up.
Yeah.
And brings him back to the black room where,
well, she tried to pick up the couple, but yeah. the gal was busy.
Where then Larry ends up watching. But I actually really love her in the scene where she's picking up the boyfriend, because I just like the way she is in the scene. It's very natural.
Yeah, she's like, she's like, hey guy, what are you doing? He's like,
acting,
oh, do I know
guess.
You? Yeah.
Yeah.
He's like, do I know you? She just gives this like lovely, radiant and warm smile. And she's like, yes,
I
met you in the black room. I saw you in the black room. And he's yeah. like, I don't remember. I must have been really messed up. And yeah. she was like, oh, no, we didn't meet. I was on the other side of the glass.
Yeah.
And just like the way she's being friendly and casual and charming. Yeah, it's great. Like yeah. she charmed me.
Yeah, absolutely. And so Larry now sees her doing that, and he's freaking out. So it becomes this element now where you get the jealousy dynamic. And in fact, when she's freaking out watching Larry bang, Jason says to her, you know, your disease is jealousy. Mine is need.
100%. And jealousy is your sickness. Yeah, mine is need.
Yeah. So now we have this dynamic where they're both, the husband and wife are both, they're conflicted with the way they feel, and she's liked it. You know, mm-hmm. she's like, he asked, you know, was he better than me? She's like, in some ways, yes. In some ways, no.
Yeah.
And then, you know, so they have this really tense exchange at night, which leads into the final scene where she gets up and leaves, and he's like, where are you going? She's like, I don't know. The way she says that.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
We laugh really hard. She's like, I don't know.
Yeah.
But this leads to the final time that they go to the house.
They're going to go to the black room, see what happens there. And, you know, as promised, there's a really good scene, like when they call Jason and he's like sitting there smoking a cigarette. And I think he's smoking Winston's.
This is after he's banged the wife and Larry's calling to set up a date.
Yeah.
And he's smoking.
And he's sitting at the table, like smoking Winston's and just like being all casual about it. And that's when he says, hold on, wait. He goes, and he just kind of like got his bones in his face, sucking on a cig. And he's like, how about some Chopin for a change? And then he like talks to Cassandra off in the distance and like puts his hand over the bottom part of the phone. And it's just like, it made me so nostalgic for like sitting at a table talking on a phone. It looked so fucking cool.
Yeah.
It was totally great. No, I love that scene. So we have everybody present. Now, this is the perfect part to discuss Linnea Quigley's entrance. She is Millie, the babysitter. She is clearly a cherished member of the family.
Yes.
She pops in on the scene, bringing
so
the kids
great.
Up to the house because one of the kids is sick. Little boy sick, the one who like intentionally spilled his milk to get attention. The kids are brats. Not going to lie.
Linnea Quigley looks amazing.
Not making me want them. But Linnea Quigley pops in with her red knee socks and her stupidly short
shorts.
She looks amazing. She has like those little tiny like acne scars on her face, which is like hot. And she looks so cute. She looks like the cutest version of young Chloe Sevigny ever.
She's
great.
It's just her presence in this movie now just gives this last 15, 20 minute section just that extra excitement.
And what is it? It's like, is it in Linnea's she doesn't get topless in this. Which
She does in many movies
and most
yeah
I would say most no problems with
yeah,
it
yeah.
But always in a movie she's gonna get like kind of snatched and like kind of kick her feet
around
a lot.
I think she's just fine. She's good. She's good to do it.
And also she's so like little. Like she's so petite, you could probably carry her around a lot.
Yeah. No, it's just great to see her.
But what a charming aspect that that she shows up with the kids. They called her, said that they, you know, whatever. She shows up. We know their dream of getting kiddo blood. And then, of course, who are they going to go for first out of everybody is going to be Millie, the babysitter, going to get that Millie blood.
Yeah, so now everyone's in the house, and it's all becoming clear. The husband and wife have been drugged, and when they wake up, they're
tied
handcuffed,
up.
Tied up, and they, you know, Jason and Bridget have Millie. They got the kids. They're, you know, obviously they want to drain the kids' blood, but they're in another room. But now this section is just this whole part, this whole final part has this great tension, these great shots of the wife. She gets free and she's hiding in a closet where she.
Yeah,
she,
we're playing cat and mouse.
Yeah, this,
now,
this whole cat. Yes, thank you.
Yeah,
this whole cat
like,
and mouse.
It's
section.
Like, how are they going to get out? Like the parents have now kind of said, like, this is a price we're not willing to pay.
Yeah.
They still love each other. It's not worth their lives. It's not worth separating. So they got to figure out how to get out of the handcuffs and get away. And I don't want to spoil like every aspect.
I mean, there's nothing to spoil. You know, I mean,
well, I'm not saying spoil, yeah. but that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't want to go too much in, but like definitely he breaks three and then he chokes Jason out with his handcuffs.
When he chokes Jason out, it's amazing.
It's an amazing part of just like that brutal, you know, struggle and then choke and then
it looks so great
when Robin is running around and she hides in a closet while
yes this part while
Cassandra
is like one
of chasing
the
best her scenes. And it's so Ted Bundy of her, like I love the improvisation of it, right? That's my thing is I always think Ted Bundy, he's gonna improv. So what she do, she's hiding in a closet, gonna grab a coat hanger and make herself a weapon.
Yes, and when Cassandra finally finds her, opens the door, the scene's amazing. It's so fast. She goes, she stabs Cassandra, and then the blood just splatters all over her.
Everybody's just,
amazing.
Like, covered in blood. And then
the way Cassandra, like, has the hanger coming out of her neck.
Oh,
oh
so
great.
And she was wearing white, so then she's, like blood-stained white clothes. And then Jason wakes up, but then he gets the, you know, two-prong blood-sucking device inserted into him, and he's got his head over his blood tub. And just when he looks back up,
with the blood covering over his face,
he just soaked in blood. Absolutely,
haunting scene.
Like dipped in blood, and then the electronics come in, and we get this amazing like point of tension, and this is where we get that supernatural bit, right?
Yeah, it blurs the line because they both sort of come back to life, or were they dead? Because after Jason's choked out, the way he rises, and he's almost like semi-brained, it's like the blood did stop going to his head because the way he's walking is so strange.
Yeah.
And then Cassandra also, the way she stands up is so strange. So it's like, are they just functioning on the final spasms, the final electrical
shocks?
Yeah,
they haven't drained out of their blood yet. They haven't quite, you know, purged their whatever 10 quarts of blood.
It's so great. And just the way that they.
But his look and the urgency, the insistency, the sounds, it truly starts getting more abstract.
The very final minutes become abstract because what happens is they're all leaving. Robin and Larry get out. They get the kids out. But then they realize Millie's still in there. So he has to go back in. And that's when he ends up stabbing Jason. He falls in the tub. They get Millie out because she still is alive. But then Jason comes up with the blood all over his face.
And I love that they refuse to leave Millie. They're like, what about Millie? I would have been like, Millie's gone. But no, they don't. They go get Millie.
I would get Millie.
Cherished member of the family.
Again.
So awesome.
This is,
they're family.
But this is what.
Tap Millie on the shoulder.
They could.
I know what you're thinking, sir. I know what you're thinking. So.
It would be just a fun time for everyone.
They don't. You don't need to go to the black room.
You have Millie.
Well, we know Linnea is one of those good-natured, freewheeling spirits for sure. But yeah, the ending is just so. It's just gets to this fever pitch, and then it ends with you think people like that ever really die,
and then cuts to these final crazy cuts of Jason.
Black and white,
Bridget, Jason,
blood.
Bridget,
blood, black and white, blood. Yeah.
And then it's over. It's so awesome.
It's kind of like a Vivaldi violin solo where you're just like, It's like the devil is holding your hand while you're stringing your tune.
It's such an incredible end to this dark sex atmosphere movie. The whole thing just, and because there's so few people in the movie, it does have this great small feel.
Mm-hmm. Personal.
Very personal.
Very likable characters. Really great performances all around.
Oh, shout out to the key stand that's across the street from our friend's place.
Oh, yeah, the key stand that makes an appearance in this film. It's still kicking.
Friend and fan of the movie said that key place is directly across the street.
And
we won't dox them.
Yeah, we won't. But, God, that, and when we see the key stand, we're like, oh, my God.
It looked like one we knew, but it's close to the one we thought it was.
One we tried to go to when we first.
Looked like it.
When we first moved here, we tried to get the
key. But it just has this great look at this era, the House in the Hills. The atmosphere of the Black Room, I can't emphasize enough how magnetic it is and how much we want to be in that room.
Yeah, this is eye candy. Like, this would be something that's great to throw on when you're not listening to the sound, too.
But again, the sound is so good.
Should play this on DJ night.
I thought that
100%. Like, this would be the type of thing that you can, because everybody's going to be like, what is this? Like, every moment is just a feast for the eyes.
Yeah, and it's just a movie that I excited to continue to return to, because I feel like it's going to be a movie that, as the years go on, the more we return to it, that we're going to have different feelings about it and different takes on it, like a movie like Rituals.
Yeah.
So I'm so happy. This movie has been in on my radar since the Nightmare USA. But it had been, I don't think it ever even came to DVD. I think it was only ever on VHS. And obviously this movie is very dark, the actual color palette of it. So I think the VHS, even most people said it's very hard to see.
Oh, this isn't hard to see. It's great.
Is the way to go. I do believe also if you don't have the disc, you can find it streaming somewhere. I believe it's on a few things. But so it has this, it does look incredible. It's very... Again, it is very low budget, but in that way that's real and lush, especially the Black Room itself.
Yeah, and it's salacious, but it's also quite a tale that is spun. It's an entire world. It's an entire universe. Like, that's what I'm saying, is like, how do you explain everything that goes on in the Black Room?
There is something that is very down to earth and realistic about it.
Yeah.
Right? Like, even their relationship with each other, their feelings about the sexual adventures that they've been going on.
Well, it's based on real life events.
It is. That's the thing.
So
there is something very realistic about this movie that
it just inserted a little bloodlust into it.
Yeah, that's, I think, especially what drew us to this. And mentioning something like Rituals, that's also something, there's something very realistic about that movie that I like when you add that element of semi-blurring those lines, just giving it that cinematic, that underground exploitation feel that this movie has, that little twist that gives it that.
But
meanwhile, the whole time,
sex and violence,
it's just very realistic. And again, it could just be a porn. Like, you, again, especially the porns we've been talking about and we'll continue to talk about on this podcast, this movie has that 100%.
Yeah.
Really, really took to this, and it's a movie. You know, we were talking about it after we watched it for the first time, which we had just watched. It was just a night that we popped it on. We hadn't planned on doing it as an episode, and then when we were deciding what to do, we're like, you know what? Let's watch that again, because we keep thinking about it, and let's watch that again and do it. So I'm glad we did. I really enjoyed this conversation, Tara,
and as did I. And I have a little, like, I guess we could end on this factoid, but another thing that I have trouble keeping in my mind is, like, how much blood people have, how when do you bleed out? Like, that was a real part of our lives for a bit, having to look into that when I was going through some troubles.
Absolutely was.
Exsanguination is bleeding out and to death. So, and I don't know about you wonderful people, but I struggle with liters and pints and how much is what and all this, how much blood we got in us. So you have about 4.5 to 5.5 liters of blood, which is 10 pints. And I think pints is just the easiest way to explain the pint, because you think about a pint of blood. So 9 to 12 pints. You can tolerate about 14% blood loss without any side effects. That's why it's okay to give a pint of blood, right? 15 to 30% of your blood will cause a mild side effect. So, you know, you give 3 pints, you're going to start to get a little dizzy. 20 to 40% will have symptoms like your blood pressure is going to drop. You're going to start having anxiety and you could possibly go into shock. So if you lose 4 pints of blood, you know, and I'm trying to think of like a pint of milk, right? That can be fatal. So 40% or more can be fatal. And that amount is 2 liters of blood, right? So just so we all are clear on it, just in case this got you thinking, like, how many pints of blood are in people again? How much can I bleed? What's happening? That's how you know.
Well, thank you for that information, Nurse Tara. Next week, the Black Cat. And again, it's going to be pretty different from this one. Probably one of the more batshit movies that we've done so far on Underground Espionage. In fact, probably the most batshit movie so far that we will have done.
Oh, an Underground Espionage? Yes, yes.
And we're really
excited. Yeah, the Black
excited.
Room is well crafted. It's got a plot that like stays on course. There's nothing that's really like left untied at the end. Like there's not a lot of loose ends. Yeah. Like just overall it's really well crafted. It doesn't go off the rails. It stays right on track. It's a crazy ass track, but it stays right on track.
We're going to be going off the rails with Luigi Cozzi's 1990s The Black Cat. And meaning 1990. That's when the movie came out. 1990.
I need to watch it again because I'm still a little confused. Yeah.
I mean, that's how we do it. We will be watching it again for a deep dive.
I'm going to need to.
So stay tuned for next week. Thank you so much for listening.
I've successfully peeled all the polish off of my fingernails.
You sure have.
Goal achieved. It was fun. It was great. I loved it. I left this hand. Not this hand.
We'll do it for next week.
I'll save it.